I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. She was a nun from Chicago. He was a guy from the Bronx studying to be a priest. Nearly 50 years ago, Willa Bickham and Brendan Walsh changed direction, married each other, and started feeding and housing the poor in Baltimore. In 1968, they co-founded Viva House near Union Square in Southwest Baltimore, where they still serve 400 meals a week to needy people and their families. Viva House is part of the Catholic Worker Movement, founded by Dorothy Day in the 1930s to help people who are down on their luck and to stand against war and violence in any and all forms. Willa Bickham and Brendan Walsh have written a book about their work and the people they've met along the way. They join me to talk about the long loneliness in Baltimore, Viva House, and the mandate for mercy. That's coming up on Midday right after the news. And welcome to Midday, everybody. Hope you had a nice weekend. I'm Tom Hall, and we are delighted that you're with us. I'm also delighted that my guests today are two social justice activists who have lived and worked among some of Baltimore's poorest and disadvantaged people for nearly 50 years. Brendan Walsh and Willa Bickham were married in 1967, and in October of the following year, they opened Viva House in Southwest Baltimore. Since then, they estimate that more than 1 million people have come to them asking for help, shelter, food, financial assistance, or maybe just a little TLC. Viva House is part of a network of places around the country that are inspired by the Catholic Worker Movement. They serve 2 meals a week to more than 200 people at each meal, and they give away hundreds of bags of donated groceries every month, and they agitate for nonviolence. In their new book, Brendan Walsh writes, "Long ago, our society lost a fundamental understanding of the common good and the necessity for human solidarity." Brendan Walsh and Willa Bickham have stood in solidarity with their neighbors in Sowebo, their fellow anti-war activists around the world, and the notion that the common good is worth standing for, worth fighting for, and worth bearing witness to. Their book is called The Long Loneliness in Baltimore, Stories Along the Way. Brendan Walsh and Willa Bickham join me in the studio. It is a delight to see you both. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You are welcome to join our conversation as well. Our telephone number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. And our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So what strikes me about this beautiful book is that this is a love story. It's a love story between the two of you, and it's a love story because love is at the fundament upon which the Catholic Worker Movement is based and upon which your work has based. Willa, let me start with you. Tell us how you two met.
Well, I came to Baltimore to be part of a community, a lay community, after leaving the convent, and I wanted to live and work with the poor. So I came here, and while I was here in Baltimore from Chicago, I met Brendan, who was working with Phil Berrigan at St. Peter Claver Parish in near Druid Park. So we fell in love. We went to we moved to the D.C. Catholic Worker, and it's there that when we married, and eventually came back to Baltimore.
And Brendan, you got married fairly soon after meeting Willa, didn't you? It wasn't a long courtship by any means.
No, it wasn't. I left the seminary in New York City in February of 67, got in touch with Dan Berrigan, who had taught me at Le Moyne, and asked if there was anything worthwhile going on. He said, well, Phil's got something going in Baltimore. And in March, I was down in Baltimore working in the Peter Claver neighborhood and then working with this Baltimore Interfaith Peace Mission, which is working against the Vietnam War. And I met Willa at Peter Claver Church during Mass. And we started going out around August of that year and then got married in December of the same year.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was pretty quick.
That's it. Why wait, right?
And why couldn't we date between March and August?
Oh, they thought I might be going back to the seminary, but it was clear that they weren't going to take me back.
Yeah. I mean, that alone, I mean, the fact that you were studying to be a priest, you're in seminary, you were a nun, I mean, to make that move, to make that personal decision to leave that vocation and start dating anybody was a really, I mean, that had to have been a traumatic thing to go through personally and emotionally for both of you.
I think it was more traumatic for our families.
Mm-hmm.
my son, the priest, my daughter, the nun.
Right, those days, yes. Right, right. And the Catonsville Nine play very importantly in the history of Viva House because
I
guess you gave some shelter to them and people and their families. And remind us about Phil Berrigan and the Catonsville Nine. Tell us that story.
We found the house in Southwest Baltimore on Mount Street in August. And agreed to rent almost immediately upon going through it, since all the things worked, and the rent was only $75 for a 10-room house. So the first people to stay there after we did some painting and renovation were the Catonsville Nine and their families, because the trial was in October of '68. We had known a lot of the people who were part of that Catonsville Nine.
And this is when they went to a draft office in Catonsville.
Took out the 1A files and burned them with homemade napalm in the parking lot of the draft board, which is a Knights of Columbus building right off Frederick Road. So we knew quite a few of the Catonsville Nine personally, and we got to know them all after that, all nine.
And Willa, the house initially was a shelter for people. People were staying there, and
yes.
You were as well. You were providing meals. How long did the shelter part of it last? Because you're no longer actually providing housing for people. You're doing some different things. But how long was that first stage, as it were?
The 70s were mostly men from the neighborhood. A lot of older men, alcoholics, who would stay with us. And then in the 80s, it was homeless women and children. It was right after deinstitutionalization, so there were a lot of women on the street, and then public housing was destroyed, so we had homeless women and children.
And deinstitutionalization was a very, very serious and, you know, seismic shift in how we treated people with mental illness, people who were sort of down and out in a lot of ways. As we've evolved now, if we've evolved since the 1980s, what do you think the current status is for people for homelessness in particular? Let's talk about people who are lacking shelter, who no longer have places to go, public places to go, in a lot of ways.
It's very important how you define homelessness, because it's not just the people that are sleeping on the street last night. It's also the people have no place to stay. They might couch surf, like go from one family to the next, or they might be able to stay in a vacant house or something. And so often we see at the soup kitchen of our neighbors, it's like the Book of Job. I mean, like, you don't believe one more bad thing could happen, you know? I mean, they didn't get the education they're supposed to get, and they lost their ID, and then they lost their room to stay in, and it's a downward spiral, and there's no coming up in this society. I mean, there's a whole group of people who are not wanted.
And Brandon, that's this group that you all have dedicated your lives to. Can you identify the impulse in you, in your heart, in Willa's heart, and the other people in the Catholic Worker Movement that leads a person to do the kind of work you're doing and to keep doing it decade after decade?
Well, first of all, there's a very good community of people that we know and are doing the same work. So there's that great support right there. And probably the quote from Dorothy Day, who wrote the book, The Long Loneliness, which is more or less her spiritual autobiography. The quote is very simple. We have all known the long loneliness, and we have learned that the only solution is love, and that love comes in community. So if you take the two things, as you mentioned love before, the common good is the other part of that, that the only solution is to invest in the common good and not in profit-making. So that's what buttresses you. Because it, the amount of loneliness that we've seen comes in many forms. It comes in the forms of murder. It comes in the form of robbery, assault, eviction, abandominiums all over. I mean, if you walk from our house north on Mount Street to North Avenue, it's almost 50% abandoned. So that means that all of these people have gone, and they've gone somewhere, but we don't know where. And we do know that they're not working because we've lost 150,000 blue-collar jobs in Baltimore City since we've been here. So we recognize that the only solution is really investment in the common good. And we're going in the other direction. Everything is being privatized. We used to be able to take somebody who was an alcoholic that day in for treatment, in for a 30-day stay at a hospital. But now we've started to close the hospitals and said the community will take care of you. And that's obviously a joke. There is no community to take care of them. And so that it's the concept of putting love and community together are the two essential things.
On 88.1, it's Midday. My guests today are Brendan Walsh and Willa Bickham. Willa is an artist whose artwork is featured in their new book, which has text by Brendan Walsh. The book is called The Long Loneliness in Baltimore, Stories Along the Way. You can join us as well along the way for this hour, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Let's go to the phones. Marilyn in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Willa Bickham and Brendan Walsh.
Hello, Tom, Willa, and Brendan. I just read the book, and it is so beautiful, and it's so rich with humanity and love. And it makes hope seem like a possibility. That's my comment. And now my question is just a practical one concerning how many meals they serve each week. It boggles my mind. Now the question is, to be specific, how many round tables with white tablecloths do you have in your surrounding, and how many folks at each table, and how do you make it happen that so many come in just a few hours and have a meal and eat in peace without being rushed?
Because you serve 400 meals a week, Will, isn't that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But we can seat 30 people at a time. And we have a very big backyard, and we have some shelter from rain and snow in the backyard. And then everybody doesn't arrive at the exact same time. So we can seat 30 and have room in the backyard for another 50 or 60 to sit on a bench and wait until the next person leaves and we have another seat. One of the things, since you don't charge, things go very, very fast. If you don't show us, like, you don't have, and we don't have a menu, the thing is everybody has the same meal. And an interesting thing is Gertrude's restaurant noticed that they could help by making a meal. So one day a month, John Shields and Doug Wenzel make the meal. It's not like leftovers. It's a real meal and that we pick up on a Tuesday and serve on a Wednesday.
Isn't that great?
So we serve a regular meal.
Yeah. Well,
and
good
we have
them.
A lot of people that come and work with us. There's a whole Wednesday group and there's a different Thursday group. A lot of volunteers, and they're so committed and so appreciative of having not only the work to do but the opportunity to work with the poor.
Well, Marilyn, thank you for your call. You know, Willa, before we take a little break here, she mentions the notion of hope, which, you know, pervades this book, is as disconcerting and depressing as so many of the stories in the book are, the people that you've run into a long way. I was taken by a comment that David Simon wrote in the preface to the book. He says that hope is the elemental origin of all that is or that can become good. So hope really is a fundamental premise upon why you're doing this work. Yeah, but it must be difficult to maintain hope.
Oh, it is. I mean, our house has grates on all the windows, and we've had four murders on our block. There's a lot of violence, a lot of, they call jump outs, you know. We'll see, look out the window, and there's three guys sitting on the curb because we have an open-air drug market in our neighborhood. The vacant houses is really depressing. That's, I'm not sure what we can do, but we've lost so many good neighbors.
My guests for this hour are Willa Bickham and her husband, Brendan Walsh. They are the founders of Viva House, part of the Catholic worker movement begun by Dorothy Day in the 1930s. Their new book, which chronicles their work providing for needy people in Southwest Baltimore and as peace activists, is called The Long Loneliness in Baltimore, Stories Along the Way. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us today. You are welcome to join us with your questions and comments. 410-662-8780 is our phone number. Midday at WIPR.org is our email and our Twitter handle at Midday Tom Hall. More with Brendan Walsh and Willa Bickham when we come back after a break. Stick around. Welcome back to Midday. Glad you're with us. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's Inauguration Day for Catherine Pugh, who becomes the 50th mayor of the city of Baltimore when she is sworn in at a ceremony scheduled to begin at 11 o'clock. At noon, we'll talk about the challenges that she'll face as mayor, and we'll look back at the tenure of Stephanie Rawlings Blake, who was catapulted into office in 2010 when Sheila Dixon was forced to resign after her misdemeanor conviction for stealing gift cards intended for needy children. Andy Green of the Baltimore Sun editorial page, longtime Sun reporter Jean Marbella, and Bishop Douglas Miles of Koinonia Baptist Church join me here in Studio A tomorrow for Midday on the mayors. And if you're just joining us today, my guests are Brendan Walsh and his wife Willa Bickham. They are the founders and sustainers of Viva House, part of the Catholic worker movement begun by Dorothy Day in the 1930s. Their new book is called The Long Loneliness in Baltimore, Stories Along the Way. You are welcome to join us with your questions and comments. 410-662-8780. If you feel like dropping us an email, go to midday at WIPR.org, or you can send us a tweet at Midday Tom Hall. So, Brendan, Dorothy Day and the Catholic worker movement, let's talk a little bit about that. You quote her as saying that basically the idea behind this is to do the works of mercy and resist the works of war. Take us back to 1933 when she and another guy, Peter Morin, founded the Catholic worker movement. Between the two world wars, was this a response to a particular thing, a particular movement in the Catholic Church, or a response to just society at large? What was her motivation?
Well, it was, of course, right during the Depression, and there were a number of people out on strike. The ship workers in the city as a big part of it, and they just it started out really as a newspaper. The Catholic Worker newspaper, and they put out the first edition on May Day of 1933. And the concept was that despite what people might not know or might know, the Catholic Worker has a position on social justice. And they started citing the encyclicals with regard to the right of people to organize unions, the right of people to just wages, and somebody said after they saw a copy of the paper, well, that's great, but I don't have anything to eat. So they started, as the thing goes, they started to put on a pot, and the pot never ran empty, and the coffee and the bread never stopped being available. So it started as a paper, and then people said, well, you know, the words are good, but now we need something to eat, and we need a place to stay, and et cetera. And from that evolved, you know, where you come in conflict with where is the money going? And so much is flushed down the military sewer that makes getting the bread impossible, and having work that is for the common good impossible. This all goes towards war making. During World War II, even when they took a pacifist stand against the war, the Catholic workers still maintained. We lost a lot of houses closed because not everybody was a pacifist at that time. But as we got into 1960, the Catholic worker became known more for its resistance to Vietnam War than to the works of hospitality. But resistance and hospitality are just the same part of one coin. If you want to do the works of mercy, you've got to resist the works of war. They go hand in hand.
And Willa Bickham, Brandon writes in the book, loneliness is connected to poverty and violence. They are spokes on the same grinding wheel. So I wonder, how is violence as manifested in war, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, pick a war, how is that related to the violence that occurs on Mount Street where you live, or throughout our city and so many other cities around the world? What is the connection between sort of geopolitical belligerence and individual belligerence here at home?
Well, I think that the monies, of course, are being used up by the military. Most of our taxpayers' money goes to the military. So that there's very few services, very few opportunities for the people at the bottom. And that creates a violence. The war on drugs is about the worst violence we've ever seen. I mean, that's a complete disaster. I mean, we have more drugs after spending trillions of dollars to curb it. But what it created was a whole population in jail. I mean, we have the highest population of people in jail in the civilized, industrialized world. So the loneliness and the military budget do go together because it's isolated, it's alienated so many people throughout this world.
Willa Bickham and Brendan Walsh. Willa is the artist. Brendan is the writer of The Long Loneliness in Baltimore, Stories Along the Way. We've got a ton of people on the line waiting to talk to you. Let's start with Deborah in Baltimore. Deborah, welcome to Midday with Willa Bickham and Brendan Walsh.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate your work very much. I'm wondering how we can donate money and where we can buy the book and volunteer, but specifically donate.
Well, we'll certainly post a link on our website, wypr.org/midday, with information about how to make a donation. Brendan, the book is published by Apprentice House, which is a local press here
at Loyola University. Yeah.
And I assume it's available in bookstores and
it's currently
Amazon and all that stuff?
Yes. Currently available at the Ivy Bookshop, and they could get it at our place where we're selling it as well. Which is a different thing. They could come down and see what the place looks like, and then they could decide to buy the book.
And you're looking for volunteers? I mean, folks to help you serve the meals, folks to help you do stuff?
We can show them what we do and tell them what spaces we need to still fill.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing pretty well on... See, nobody gets paid a salary, so the amount of money we need isn't that great because we just have... And we don't have any rent, and we don't have any mortgage to pay. We bought the house for $1,000 in 1975. So it's not money. It's when we talk about doing the food bags, we can always tell people, if you want to bring the food bags, we can tell you what to put in it and when to bring it. And that would help a lot. Then we don't have to go out and buy the stuff to put in the bag, but that we have a full bag.
Mm-hmm. And Willa, we should make sure folks know, not only do you serve the meals at Viva House, but you provide bags of groceries to families who come knocking on your door.
But we're also neighbors, so even if the food pantry or soup kitchen isn't going, people stop by for help with gas and electric or, you know, funeral expense or eviction notice. So it took us 25 years to put a sign up saying Viva House because we always just wanted to be neighbors. We do not want to ever think of ourselves as an agency or anything like that. We're just part of the neighborhood.
On 88.1, it's Midday. That's Willa Bickham. Brendan Walsh is here as well. Our number, 410-662-8780. Pamela in Old Goucher, welcome to Midday.
Thank you so much. I wanted to say my husband and I moved into Baltimore City in 1999, and we met some lovely, lovely friends of ours who introduced us to Brendan and Willa, and Brendan and Willa have become such an inspiration to us that we started working in our own community and expanding our work, and we always think of them as our inspiration. One of the things that means so much to us is that support of justice, just as Brendan was saying, justice of housing, of food, of medical, everything that the basic needs of human beings need to be addressed before you can have peace, whether it's in the world or it's in our own city. And that is the way to go, rather than the expenditure of tons of money on everything else. So I just wanted to say that and to say I love the book. I've bought copies for our daughter and son-in-law and brother, and I think it's something that everybody could get quite a lot of information on and really will inspire everybody. Thank you so much.
Pamela, thank you for your call. I appreciate it, and happy holidays. You know, this is, I think, an excellent choice for a holiday gift if you're looking for one. I really did enjoy this book. And Willa, I have to commend you in particular about the paintings and the drawings that are in this book. They're beautiful. Catholic worker art is a thing, isn't it? I mean, it's a genre.
It is characteristic of the Catholic worker. There's a lot of Catholic worker artists. And our art is basically art for the people. I mean, it's good to have galleries and museums, but this is for the people in the streets. And so art is very much part of resistance. I can't tell you how many posters and murals that we've done, and lots of street theater, lots of music with this resistance.
Bill in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Brendan Walsh and Willa Bickham of Viva House. Thanks for your call.
I just wanted to second some of the other discussions about what a fabulous book this is and how great Brendan and Willa are. I'm going to suggest for your show tomorrow, Tom, that you read the poem on page 57 when discussing the city of Baltimore, because Brendan has really got it right about bread and circuses and how money is being spent on baseball stadiums, and Don Schaefer and Willard Hackerman have basically bankrupted us. As we look at Port Covington, so important.
Well, Bill, I appreciate the call. Thanks so much. As a matter of fact, that's Bill Berry, everybody. And Bill, I am indebted to you for introducing me to Brendan many years ago. And Brendan, why wait till tomorrow? Why don't we do it today? Read it, because this is a book of essays that you have written, recollections,
poems.
Read us this poem that Bill Berry has mentioned.
Well, this is a poem about, you know, we have these two stadiums, two brand new stadiums that that the public actually paid for, even though it should have been done by these people themselves. And now we have a casino, and then we have Port Covington coming up. And even though Kevin Plank is the 527th richest person on the planet, he still wants us to give him $620 million. He could just take out a loan from himself and pay it back. That money should go for the common good, not to build a city within a city. So anyway, I got to thinking that maybe we should do some work about how this thing gets to be. So the title of this poem is How About Them O's, Hun? And it goes like this. This is Governor Schaefer, and I think it was the mayor then was Schmoke. So it goes like this. The governor rants and raves. The mayor, he just sits, clueless, but reading. Developer Willard Hackerman, he just laughs and counts the gold all the way to the right field wall. But hey, how about them O's, hun? Public space, a memory, but have we got private? Festival marketplaces, holiday police shopping, mall thralls, consumerism a go-go. Big skyboxes, higher, 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 like the rents and the wounds. But hey, how about them O's, hun? Meanwhile, the kids on the street, not coming home at night, time on the hand, no work for the hands. Schoolboys carry guns, not books. Metal detectors, no books to read. Libraries are gone, but hey, how about them O's, hun? The walls are up, right, center, left. Great stadium, divided city. Us, them. Have plenty, want more, versus have nothing. No trickling down. Work. scarce. Part-time, part pay, low pay, no pay. But hey, how about them O's, hon? The joke in Charm City, the difference between preschool kids and school kids is simple. The preschoolers lack the coordination to pull the trigger. But hey, how about them O's, hon? Oh, one more thing. We'll see to it, we'll guarantee it, that the poor will always, always be here. Wait, baby, that ball is going, going. Baby, that ball is gone. But hey, how about them O's, hon?
Brennan Walsh reading from his new book, The Long Loneliness in Baltimore, Stories Along the Way, with artwork by Willa Bickham. You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. So, Willa, there are those who take issue with you and Brendan and the others who oppose, for example, the TIF, the tax incremental financing for development like Port Covington, who would say, you know, it's not a tax break, it's floating bonds, and it's creating infrastructure that will lead to jobs and other benefits to the city. There are a number of clergy in town. Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development was at the table, and they consider the donations and the $130 million that the folks at Under Armour and Mr. Plank have promised to be a step in the right direction. We're going to be talking tomorrow, actually, about Stephanie Rawlings Blake as she leaves office and Catherine Pugh as she assumes office. What is the answer? What are the fundamental things that should be part of moving forward and making the city better and helping the kinds of people that you help every day?
Well, Dorothy Day always said that the best thing to do is to invest in the poor, and that's where you'll get your real return. And until we invest in our neighborhoods, we're not going to see an end to the violence in the city. We're just coating it, sugarcoating it, with more stadiums, more Covingtons. We have to get down to the roots of the neighborhood so that we have one Baltimore. Right now, it is definitely two Baltimores. We're not in sync together. We're not working together. There's a whole segment of us who are left behind.
We're going to take a little bit of a break for the moment. My guests this hour are Brendan Walsh and Willa Bickham, the husband and wife team who co-founded Viva House in 1968. Their new book is called The Long Loneliness in Baltimore, Stories Along the Way. You are welcome to join us, 410-662-8780. You can send us a tweet at Midday Tom Hall or drop us an email, midday@wipr.org. Before we take a break, Baltimore is once again on track to reach a horrid and unacceptable milestone, 300 murders in 1 year. As of today, 295 people have been the victims of a homicide in our city. 620 people have been victims of non-fatal shootings. Every Sunday at Memorial Episcopal Church in Bolton Hill, they read the names and pray for the people who have died from violence in Baltimore during the previous week. Now, it may also be the case that other churches and houses of worship do this too, but Memorial is the only one that we know of directly. So beginning today, we are going to read those names as well every Monday here on Midday. We will stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we will remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. A researcher named Ellen Worthing has been compiling a list of Baltimore homicide victims for the past 15 years. We are indebted to her for the data that she posts on her blog, CHAMS page. We also consult the Baltimore Sun's list of homicides, which they've been compiling since 2007. So from the Saturday after Thanksgiving through last Friday, the following people lost their lives to violence. Jacob Hayes, age 22. Charles McGee, age 23. Dwayne Dorsey, age 27. Davon Dozier, age 29. Troy Smothers, age 23. Jamal Stewart, age 18. Plus an unidentified man who was 73 years old. You're listening to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be back after a break. Stay with us. Thank you. And welcome back. It's midday here on 88.1 WYPR. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, my guests today are Willa Bickham and her husband, Brendan Walsh. They are the founders of Viva House in Sowebo, which is Balmerie's for Southwest Baltimore. They've written a lovely book about their activism in the Catholic worker movement. It's called The Long Loneliness in Baltimore, Stories Along the Way. By the way, they will be reading from the book at the Enoch Pratt Library next month on the 24th of January, and we'll have a link to that event on our website. You can join us today for our conversation about Viva House with Brendan Walsh and Willa Bickham. 410-662-8780, our email address midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. So we are going to be talking about the mayors tomorrow, both the past one and the incoming one. You've been an observer of this city and a resident of this city now for nearly 50 years. What advice do you have for the mayor? And have there been mayors over the years that you think have done a better job than others addressing the problems that you all have dedicated your lives to?
That's a hard one. You know, We of course knew Schaefer the best, mainly because he would send us those those very short little postcards or with his name on it, saying and he would always actually question our Christianity if we were doing a demonstration that he didn't like when we were taking on why would you do this, why would you do that. The interesting thing is he never agreed to do TIFFs. Because it's the length of time the thing has to be paid back. And nobody is there at the end to say, hey, what happened? What happened to this money?
Yeah, it's decades and decades.
It's decades, so, yeah. So that's one thing. But so I would say, I don't know. It depends on what you mean by the good. If our main interest is the people on the very, very bottom and what happens to their lives. And I can't say that there's been any great improvement since we started in 1968 for that. Like I was saying, in our neighborhood, there used to be 40,000 more people in zip code 21223. So they've left. The number of murders have increased. When you give the big number, the key number when you compare Baltimore to other cities is how many per 100,000. And Baltimore is 55 per 100,000. And that puts us on par with cities like Detroit, who have the same thing. And interestingly enough, it's the same economics that, when we lost Bethlehem Steel here, and they lost, a big industry up in Detroit, too. That's when you saw really what was going on in the city. And where will these people ever work again? That's the thing that we don't know. It seems to me that, we started off with slavery, and then we had cheap labor. And now we've come into expendable labor. We have people that we don't need to do work,
And Willa Bickham, how do you get those jobs back? I mean, we have President-elect Trump promising to bring back manufacturing all over the country. We've got him promising to bring back the jobs in the coal mines to the miners in Kentucky. And we've got an awful lot of people who think that that's a pipe dream, that globalization and automation and the marketplace is just a very different place than it used to be when the factory at Beth Steele was cooking 24 hours a day. How do you see these jobs and these opportunities for people at the bottom of the economic ladder developing?
They're not going to develop. It's over. We have a whole class of people who will never work again. And we see the loss of dignity among the people. They feel terrible about themselves. Sometimes they'll come to the soup kitchen and say, oh, I got a job, so exciting. Now, what they mean is they got a job for a week or a day. But really, people want to work. But there is no work. You can't work in a society where greed is the main ingredient. The 1% does not need the bottom.
So if there's no need for the people on the bottom, Brendan, then how does one create a need for them?
If you go through Baltimore City, you can see the needs all over the place. The whole city's infrastructure is going to pot every way you go. I mean, whether it's the sewer lines, the water, all that kind of stuff. You have that. there's a definite need.
And those could be jobs.
They could be jobs.
Mr. Trump has alluded to his intention to do that kind of infrastructure spending and infrastructure development. So who knows?
But there's a resistance to use public money to put people to work. They want it all privatized. And it's not going to work that way because privatization is the profit motive. And right now, capital is very, very much ahead. Capitalism is in the lead. It's winning most of the battles and struggles, right? But the thing is, if we don't start thinking like Henry Ford thought about, listen, I make these automobiles, but damn, I better have jobs so that people can buy the things. You know, I mean, it works that way. I mean, I could find work in recreation for kids all over the city. I don't mean these big sports teams and stuff like that. I mean the everyday thing.
Like the rec centers.
Yeah, rec centers. I mean, they're there. Those jobs are there, but it's all going to come from the public sector. So people have got to be willing to put tax dollars into providing people with work. If the private people aren't going to do it, and they're not, then, you know, what are we going to do there?
Let's, if you wouldn't mind, let me dig down a little deeper about the notion of violence, Willa. Brendan writes in the book, if you want to know why a teenager shoots another teenager for a vial of crack, go to the Pentagon. Talk to me a little bit more about that relationship between the Pentagon and the kid on Mount Street who's defending his territory because he's dealing drugs in that particular neighborhood.
Mm. We could talk hours about that, but the violence on the street, selling drugs, and the Pentagon are so closely connected. I have to say, Brendan has certainly done more research on this. Would you?
Well, in the book,
Is it simply a matter of priorities? In other words, the U.S. government spends more on the military than they could spend on infrastructure or something.
To me, it's the violence that the military teaches the kid. They teach the kid that the solution to problems comes with violence. So the solution to getting money comes with violence, okay? The kid who does that is as lonely, to keep with the idea of loneliness, as the person in Colorado who sits at an Air Force base and sends drones to kill another human being at somebody else's order, whom he doesn't see, and then goes home and has dinner. That teaches the kid, wait a minute, what is human life worth? If somebody can operate drones and kill people they don't even know at somebody else's whim, the Pentagon's whim, then what kind of a society do we have? What the big boys teach the kids that violence is the solution to problems. And that's where violence and poverty come together, and loneliness and greed. They all come together in that whole kind of idea that violence is the way to go.
And Will, in addition to providing meals, providing bags of groceries, providing a compassionate shoulder to cry on, Viva House serves as a meeting place to talk about the issues that Brendan's talking about here. I mean, you for years now have used this as a gathering place in the community to parse out solutions or at least approaches to some of these very systemic problems. Talk about some of the movement stuff that you've done at the house.
Sure. We've had a lot of study groups and organizing for different demonstrations, street theater. Right now, people, of course, are very concerned about what's going on in North Dakota with the pipeline and thrilled that the National Guard is not going to
the Army Corps of Engineers
are not going to pursue that permit. But locally, it's been really difficult to organize. But as the repression comes, as more Trump things come, of course, we have to get out on the streets again. The last time we did a lot of organizing was around the Freddie Gray murder. And we have very, very close friends that work to help with resistance.
We have a mutual friend, Liz McAllister, who was Phil Berrigan's wife, mm-hmm. Who lived here for many years in Jonah House, another house very similar, I guess, in some ways to Viva House, in that it's based in the nonviolent movement. She's since moved up to New York to be closer to her daughter. But I have described my meetings with Liz as being in the proximity of a saint.
Yes, yes.
And there's a lot of people who would describe their meetings with you as being in the proximity of saints. And you write about this, Brendan, in the book. You say, you don't have any use for that. You don't want to be called saints.
No, no. Dorothy Day is up for sainthood, and we don't believe in that concept. We do believe that we've already acclaimed her to be a saint, but we don't need to go through a process that's costly for sainthood.
What's your take on Pope Francis? I mean, who is, of the past several popes, at least a person who has turned his focus, it appears, to the most needy among us. He has spoken out, be it about climate change or about capitalism or about globalization. He has literally washed the feet of people who are poor and destitute. Do you see a shift in the Catholic Church? Because the Catholic worker movement is still very much premised in the Catholic Church, is it not, Willa?
Well, the Catholic Church has changed a whole lot, obviously, and we're very pleased that Pope Francis is so connected with the poor and so so gracious about his work with the poor. His work with the women is not as pleasing, and that makes it rather hard to be part of a church who refuses to acknowledge women as co-equals. So there's a little difficulty there, but obviously Pope Francis is as good as they come. I mean, he is just wonderful, just wonderful.
I mean, Brent, it's called the Catholic Worker Movement. Do you receive any help, any advice, any permission, any flack from, for example, the Archdiocese of Baltimore? And
We didn't ask anybody's permission to start. And we do get help from individuals, and we get a lot of help from say, like Loyola College helps us with food bags, and different parishes help us, but like St. Ignatius downtown. But it's mostly on the individual level. We're not sponsored by Catholic Charities or anything like that. Everything that we raise just comes from people who get our newsletter or who know what we're doing or think it's a good idea, that kind of thing. It's very, very grassroots organizing there.
And so to remind folks as we finish up, meals are served at Viva House on Wednesdays and Thursdays every week. If people want to help do that, either physically as volunteers or if they want to make a donation of food or resources, we'll have a link on our website to to show how to do that. Does that make sense?
All right. Sure.
Well, congratulations. This book is beautiful, and the work that you do is inspiring. I appreciate your being here. Brendan Walsh and Willa Bickham, they are the founders of Viva House in Southwest Baltimore. Their new book is called The Long Loneliness in Baltimore, Stories Along the Way. It's published by a great press called Apprentice House, which is a student-run publishing house at Loyola University of Maryland. We'll have information about the book. And as I said, if you're interested in how you can help Viva House, come to our website, wypr.org/midday. That'll do it for us today. Coming up tomorrow on the broadcast, it's Inauguration Day for Catherine Pugh, who takes the oath of office to become the city's 50th mayor. On the next Midday, we'll talk about the legacy of Stephanie Rawlings Blake and the opportunities for Catherine Pugh with Jean Marbella and Andy Green of the Baltimore Sun and Bishop Douglas Miles, one of the founders of Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development. That's tomorrow at noon right here on Midday. One other program note, tomorrow night at 7:30, I hope you can tune into WIPR for Christmas with Choral Arts, a live broadcast of a concert that I'm conducting with the Baltimore Choral Arts Society Chorus and Orchestra. We'll be at the Baltimore Basilica performing some beautiful holiday music. Andy Beanstock will host, and I hope you can join us either here on the radio or online. Thanks to the Diz for supplying lunch today for our guests. They supply lunch to a lot of other people, and we've got lunch for you today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. Features signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. I'm Tom Hall. On behalf of the entire Midday team, thanks for listening. Have a great day.